Hi, I'm Michael Paré, the star of Traded and Eddie and the Cruisers. You're listening to Mr. Media.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. On today's show, I'll welcome actor Michael Paré, star of a new indie western, Traded. You probably best remember Michael for his lead roles in Eddie and the Cruisers and Streets of Fire. The film also includes Tom Sizemore, Trace Adkins, and Kris Kristofferson. Stick around, and please beware of creepy dudes selling stagecoach tickets.
Josh LaBar. That was Josh LaBar. He's in Entourage.
Is that right? He was seriously creepy and Traded.
Yeah, great, right?
It was nasty. And he got what he had coming, too. Take your glasses off. That's the moment when a cowboy, played by Michael Paré, a previously loving, respectful father and rancher in the Old West, signals that the previously restrained film, Traded, is about to get physical. He becomes a crazy sumbitch on his way to discovering that his 17-year-old daughter Lily has been taken against her will into an underground sex ring. In Traded, a smartly directed indie film that's part High Noon and part Deadwood, and which focuses on sex trafficking in Kansas, Paré dominates every scene he's in. Although, in fairness, Kris Kristofferson is pretty compelling himself as a philosophical bartender that Paré encounters in Wichita on the hunt for his kidnapped teen daughter. "I'm presently searching for my daughters," Paré tells a man. I believe she's been imprisoned in town as a whore. And now you know the plot of the movie, which co-stars Trace Adkins and Tom Sizemore. Paré, an actor who made a huge splash on the silver screen in the mid-1980s as the star of Eddie and the Cruisers and Streets of Fire, has been busy ever since. And for me, talking to Paré is the completion of a full-circle cruise. In 1983, after Eddie and the Cruisers caused a sensation in theaters, I spent a full day chauffeuring the singing voice of Eddie Wilson around to Tampa Bay area radio stations in exchange for an extended interview with John Cafferty. Michael Paré, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, great to be here, Bob. I didn't know you knew John Cafferty.
Yeah, I actually, I think there was a 2-year period that I interviewed him at least 3 times and spent this one really long day with him, which was a lot of fun. And I hadn't even thought about it until I knew I was going to be talking to you.
He's a great guy. He has a great voice. It was great to be around him. And the saxophone player, Michael Toons Antunes, was also a great person.
Oh, I remember him. Yeah, he was.
He plays Wendell in the movie.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Or maybe it's just been so long that I forgot.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk to you about Eddie, but let's talk about Traded first, and we'll come back full circle in a couple of minutes. How did you get involved with Traded?
Well, I had done a few small parts for Tim in like 3 or 4 movies. And then he called me up and he says, "Mike, how do you think you'd look in a cowboy hat?" And I said, "Well, you got to be careful how you choose the hat. But, you know, I think I'd look." And he said, "Because I've got this little, got this part in a movie called Forgotten, where you play an evil sheriff, you know, who's a corrupt and drug dealer." And I said, "Well, I'm in over." And I read that and I thought it was great and it was a great role. And so I play a sheriff with one of those, you know, one of those sheriff cowboy hats. And about halfway through the movie, Ken said, "You know, Mike, I've been meaning to make a Western. And I got a great role for you if you'd be interested." And I said, "A Western? You mean like cowboys and six shooters?" And he said, "Yeah, absolutely. It's a period right after the Civil War. About 10 years after the Civil War in Kansas." And I said, "Damn, let me read that." And it took about a month before he could actually say, "Mike, I want you to play the lead." And I said, "Wow, Tim, this is going to be a fun project." So, Tim Moore Jr., you know, saw me in the role and put it all together.
It is a it's a big role too. I mean, there's other people in the movie, but really, you focus pretty much on you through the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it was so much fun to do. You know, I've ridden horses in a couple movies, but for this one, they got me this great I don't know if you call him a wrangler or a coach or what, but he was he taught polo up in Santa Barbara. And you know, they know how to control horses like you've never seen. It's amazing what they can do. So he taught me a few tricks and put me on a great horse, and you know, that was really a lot of fun. I worked with a lot of guns, so that wasn't you know, that difficult for me to pick up. Mm-hmm. But you know, with that six shooter, it's a single action. You know, you can't just pull the trigger over and over again. You got to pull the hammer back each time. So you have to practice with that quite a bit too.
Well, you know, I wondered about that. There's a scene late in the film where you're hiding behind some bales of hay and shooting at a guy up on the roof, and it looks like you're getting off a few shots, but now that you mention it, I guess it does cut back and forth because it's not an automatic shooter, right?
No, you know, now a double action revolver, you just pull the trigger and you know, the hammer goes back automatically. It's a double action, right? Mm-hmm. But with those old ones, you know, you got to pull the hammer back. So, you know, there's a couple of scenes where I do, you know, shoot quick, but, you know, it's just after practice. You know, yeah, it's you know, that's, you know, people say, what's it like doing a Western? They say, well, there's a few things you got to practice before you want to do it on camera.
I remember thinking when you were behind those bales of hay getting ambushed, I kept thinking, geez, I hope he remembered to bring some more ammo because I think he's just about out.
Right. And, you know, those bullets are behind your back on the belt, you know, so it's hard to get to. You
know, yeah. Whoever designed that would not.
In real life, so it's a lot different, you know. I don't think, you know, the great thing about a Western is that it's American, what do you call it, mythology. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's why there's a lot of them being made these days, is that American mythology is selling around the world. You know, Asia loves it. You know, I don't know, it just gives you license to really dream about, you know, being independent in your horse, your rifle, and, you know, living off the land and being out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, there's nobody you can call. You can't call the sheriff or the FBI or the police. You know, it's man's man and honor and you know, justice. I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but it really is the independent American.
Well, there's always been these parallels, right, between the American Westerns and the Japanese samurai films, kind of for the same reasons, I think, right?
Yeah, right. And, you know, look what a big hit Kung Fu was, you know, with the Chinese monk roaming around the West doing the right thing. It could have just as easily been an American cowboy, you know. It could have been Paladin. Paladin, where do you roam? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Right, right.
Remember that series, Paladin? Yeah, you know, Paladin, Quadrant Kane, Clay Travis. I would love to be included in that thought, right?
So, what are the unique challenges for a modern actor to play in a Western today? I mean, 60, 70 years ago, we saw a lot more Westerns. There aren't as many made today. You know, what makes it more difficult for you to be out there doing that now?
Well, I think 50 or 60 years ago, more people rode horses. The Midwest, people still had horses, you know. Now it's like horses are a hobby, but I think 50, 60 years ago, people still used horses, you know. I grew up in New York. You know, Clint Eastwood, he grew up in the Oranges in New Jersey, which is not a city.
No.
You know, it's a whole mindset. you know, because we have reverence, but we don't have experience. I mean, I lived in Michigan for a couple of years, and people move a lot slower there. But, you know, I guess it's like anything. You know, it's a period piece, and you do your research, you prepare, and you find yourself talking, you know, in the rhythm and cadence of the period. Like, you know, Tim is always catching me and telling me to slow down. He would say, Mike, the thing about cowboys is they don't live by the watch. They live by the calendar. You know, and just, you know, that's it. Just keep that in mind. And, you know, no matter how much of a hurry you're in, it's not like you got to get it done in the next 20 minutes.
So speak a little bit slower than you, but a little bit faster maybe than Clint Eastwood.
Well, Clint never said much more than two or three words at a time.
True.
You know, except for that speech in Forgotten, in Unforgiven.
Right.
You know, where he says, yeah, I killed women and children. I killed boys. I killed old men. I killed just about everything that moved or crawled. And now I'm going to kill you, little Bill. That's about one of the worst speeches Clint Eastwood ever had.
Oh, man. What I'm picking up from this conversation is that you have some real appreciation and knowledge of film and actually TV history based on talking about the Kung Fu a little while ago. Am I wrong there?
Well, you know, I'm a baby boomer. We grew up on television, right? Mm. Saturday morning cartoons, westerns on Saturday afternoon, you know, the Untouchables and that kind of stuff for television, and yeah. You know, I've been a film fan my whole life, you know, from Montgomery Cliff, Marlon Brando, Jimmy Dean, Paul Newman, you know, all those guys.
A lot of actors.
I worked with Rod Steiger.
Really?
I did a movie with Rod Steiger, yeah. Yeah, I worked with a lot of old guys. Rod Steiger, Bruce Dern, Malcolm McDowell, Dennis Hopper.
That's interesting.
I've been doing it a long time.
Oh, no, I realize that. Well, you find a lot of the younger actors, even for their frame of reference, just don't know the actors. They don't know much history. They don't know what's come before them. They just know what's out in front of them.
Well, I don't know, but I still go to class, you know. I go to one class, and I teach in another class. Hmm. So, you know, you're constantly referencing, you know, the greats. The great screenplays and the great movies and the great plays and great actors. You know, you got to remember what we do for a living, you know. I think that sometimes people forget that, you know, they pay us to act, not to do the business. And I think that's why a lot of actors end up making mistakes is they forget about the business and they focus on just the art of it. You got to find that balance to have longevity, you know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of kind of newer actors, Trace Adkins, who's a country singer, has a great part in this film. He seems ready-made for more Western work, if there's more of it out there. What did you think about working with the singer-turned-actor?
Well, you know, Trace has such tremendous presence, you know, and he's very professional. You know, he's not one of these guys who doesn't know his dialogue or another story. You know, he's a Louisiana guy. I mean, he's a big son of a gun. I think he's like 6'6" and 240 pounds. I mean, he's a big fucking guy. You know, and he's a country western singer. You know, I would love to do a movie and spend more time with him. You know, in the story, I'd like to do a story that includes him or be in his movie. You know, I know he's done a couple of westerns on his own. I think he did. The Virginian, and I think he did a remake of Stagecoach. So I know he's pursuing it seriously, and he's a very serious guy, so he's probably got himself a great coach, and he's an intelligent guy, so he's probably picking up really quick. He was fun to work with. You know, patient, I mean, getting home, he's never comfortable, you know, because there's a lot of rigging involved, you know, and that always invades your space as an actor. You know, because you got to stand just like this, and you got to do this, and, you know, at the same time, give a dramatic performance. Mm. So, technically, you know, he's great. I mean, going close to his eyes, and he's a serious guy. You know, he's there. I like him a lot.
Now, this was technically at least, the second time you worked with him, I think. You were both in The Lincoln Lawyer, but did you have any scenes together?
No, we met. We met, but he was playing a biker, and I was playing a cop, and I think Matthew McConaughey is the only one who had scenes with him.
Oh, okay. I wonder.
And the bikers, of course.
I had actually interviewed Michael Connelly, who wrote the story that's based on.
Isn't he a great guy, man? I read all of those Harry Bosch novels.
Oh, they're great.
He's one of the best crime writers I ever. I mean, he's right up there with James Ellroy, Elmore Leonard, Michael Connelly. They're all like, I once I pick up the book, I can't put it down. You know, I take it everywhere with me. And, if I have to wait 5 or 10 minutes somewhere, I read it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the Bosch series on, I can't remember if it's Amazon or Netflix, but it's a great show.
Amazon. Yeah, but I tell you, I wish I had gotten a chance. I love Harry Bosch. You know, I think there's probably, 1,000 actors who wish they had gotten a chance on that. But I think they just went right to the dice.
I have to ask you about working with Christofferson. Had you met him before?
Yeah, actually, I was in a little movie where he played the president. And I was an ambassador, so I had met him and spent a day with him. He has such a story. You're going to do the Kris Kristofferson story someday. And the funny thing is that he said the first movie he ever made was called The Last Picture Show, right? Or the last movie, I think it was, and that Dennis Hopper directed it. And so his first movie was called The Last Movie. And his daughter is in Traded, and that's her first movie and his last movie. He found that very interesting, and so did I. I mean, his daughter plays the girl who plays the piano, and says, what would you do if someone had kidnapped your daughter?
Oh, that was her.
That's Kris Kristofferson's daughter, yeah.
Well, in the credits, I tried to figure out who she was playing, but in the credits it just indicated Claire, and I thought, okay, I can't remember who Claire is. I know who Lily is and your wife in the film.
Oh, she's in the trailer, right? That's her in the trailer saying, what would you do if someone disappeared your daughter?
Right, which ultimately, without giving much away, it changes the course of the film, because that line has a big effect on where the film goes.
Yeah, well, he's Kris Kristofferson, and he gave the whole speech about, what dog are you going to feed, Hoss?
Right. that was great.
What wolf are you going to feed? I forget it. Yeah. Yeah, come on. This guy wrote, me and Bobby McGee, he wrote Take the Ribbon from, Help Me Make It Through the Life. Help me make it through the night. I mean, it's Kris Kristofferson. He's such a heavyweight, and he's a good scholar, And he told me he was on his way to military school, either West Point or the one in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he stopped in New Orleans, in Nashville, and changed the course of his life. He said, I'm going to be a songwriter. And it was because he comes from a military family, and he's as much an American icon as John Wayne. But John Wayne never wrote a hit song,
That's true. Well, let's.
Yeah, but come on, the guy. That's amazing. It's an amazing guy to be around. You look in his eyes, and you see the history of the world.
And he looked great in the film. I was surprised. I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, he's not a...
Hey, when he jumped on that horse, he said, I love being on a horse. I'd rather be on a horse than walking.
I'm hoping we'll see more of him.
Oh, he's got that old horse. Yeah, I do too, but I think this might be his last movie.
Is he ill?
By choice, yeah. Fine, he's... No, it's not ill.
Oh.
He's got to be like 75, right? 70
yeah.
Something at least. Come on, all the things that he's done, maybe he wants to just, as he says in a movie, kick off his boots and sit and think about things,
That was a great line.
Yeah.
Well, before we run out of time, I do want to talk to you about Eddie and the Cruisers. It was such a great movie and just so of its time. How did you get involved in that? And as importantly, did you know going into it that you would be lip syncing the songs, or was there ever any thought that you might be singing?
It was my first. Let's see, I was doing Greatest American Hero, right? Mm-hmm. And we were shooting in the Caribbean, and me and my buddy Don Cervantes got, you know, and we had a connecting flight from St. Croix to New York, New York to LA. Well, we didn't have to work the next few days, so me and Don Cervantes, we got off the plane and went to see my brother in New York, you know, because that's where I was from. And while I was there, my agent said, since you're in New York, you want to go in and meet with this guy, Marty Davidson. And I said, can I get the script? And they said, yeah, just go up to, I think it was like on 60th Street, and pick up the script and read it, and then go in and see Marty. So it was kind of coincidental, serendipitous. I went in and I met with him. I didn't audition. I didn't have to sing. I didn't do anything. I just read the script. And that meeting started it all, I guess. You know, I didn't say no to anything. I figured it's rock and roll. If they want me to sing, I can sing. But I didn't know anything about it except that it was a movie. And the director wanted to see me, and I went and met him. He asked me if I could sing. I said, "Yeah, I sing like Sinatra." And he said, "Do you play any instruments?" I said, "Yeah, I play guitar like Jimi Hendrix." I don't know what it was about me that Marty liked, but it might have just been the arrogance and just walking in and saying, "Yeah, I can do anything you want. I can do it."
Well, that's kind of Eddie Wilson, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of all magical stuff, man. You know, I could talk about it for forever because I remember every day. I remember every day of that production. And I exchanged emails with Matthew Lawrence, the guy who played Sally Amato. Hmm. Yeah. So, I'm in touch with some of those old guys.
Well, and you mentioned at the top when I mentioned the film, we talked briefly about John Cafferty. Did you get to know him on the shoot? It seemed unlikely that, you necessarily would have crossed paths during the shoot of the film.
Well, they didn't know what kind of music they were going to have. At one time, they were going to do, doo-wop.
Huh.
Right? An a cappella group. Yeah. I mean, that's Kenny Vance, who was the producer, the musical producer.
Mm-hmm.
He was with Jay and the Americans. You know, that only in America, that guy, Jay and the Americans, is doo-wop guy.
I know him
so
very well.
Kenny was really hoping, Kenny was hoping that it would be doo-wop. But then the studio, Aurora, said, we need rock and roll, because that doo-wop stuff doesn't sell. Then a cappella, we're going mainstream. So we all flew up to Connecticut and saw this band, Beaver Brown. And they had this song, Tender Years, mm-hmm. that Marty thought was just fantastic. And then Kenny went to work with John, and they wrote, Dark Side, the lyrics to Dark Side were in the novel. You know, it was like a short poem in the novel.
Oh.
So, and in the screenplay. So Kenny and John got together and turned Dark Side into, the hit song in the movie. And Wild Summer Nights was, John had already recorded with Tender Years on the flip side. They needed like four songs, and they had them already, So I don't know how decisions were made. Nobody talked to me, I was new, They didn't know what was going to happen. Until that day that we were shooting in Haverford, I think it was a college at one time, Haverford, in Pennsylvania there. They didn't know if I was going to get fired or not until after I did the first concert scene. Because if I couldn't do that, they didn't have a movie. You can't do a rock and roll movie and not have, a rock star. So nobody was talking to me, telling me anything until after that first performance of, I think, Dark Side was first. After I did the first performance of Dark Side, that's when people started talking to me. Because they said, okay, now we have a movie.
It would seem like, and I don't know, I mean, when you were a kid, did you ever dream of being A, a cowboy, or B, a rock star? And, how cool is it that you've gotten to do both?
Well, I was in a band when I was, in junior high school for a while. We didn't get anywhere, but so, yeah, I, Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley, Jim Morrison, who's the guy with Great Balls of Fire?
Oh, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lee Lewis. Yeah, this kind of music was in my blood, I'd always fancied, to be a rock star. I'd get up there and do a song and just fucking knock it out of the park. Yeah. And, be a cowboy. When we were kids, we played soldiers. We played war. We played combat. Remember that series, Combat?
Of course.
With Vic Morrow?
Yep.
Yeah, we played combat, and we played Marvel superheroes. I learned to read on comic books. I want to hear a funny story about Marvel.
Please.
When I landed in New Jersey, to do Eddie and the Cruisers, I had my guitar and, a carry-on bag. And the guy who picked me up, to take me to the hotel, was Louis D'Esposito, the executive producer of all these Marvel movies. But he was like a second AD at the time, an assistant director.
Wow.
Yeah, he picked me up at the airport, and he went on to make Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, The Avengers, all of them. That's Louis D'Esposito.
You need to get back in touch with him because, they've been – it's funny because I was thinking about it. I wasn't even thinking to bring it up, but, they've been bringing on so many mature actors in these films to give them a little more gravitas. And I was thinking, boy, you'd be perfect in one of these.
I would love it. I would love it. I saw him once, and I called him, and, it's an international corporation. It's Disney now.
Yeah.
Right? So there's not one guy who makes a decision anymore. Mm. It's like a global conspiracy who gets to be in this goddamn movie.
Let me tell you something. You need to have your agent put "traded" in front of those guys at Marvel and see if that's not enough to get you, get you into one of these films as a heavy of some kind. Because I don't know. I think you'd be great in one of those films.
Not a bad idea. I got a couple of texts from Lewis. I'll see if he'll send me his email, I'll send it over to him.
So what's next for you? You mentioned before we started talking officially that you were actually in this area in Tampa filming Infiltrator at the end of last year. What's up next?
I'm going to do this movie about – it takes place in Vietnam in 1957 before the American involvement. And I play a French Foreign Legion guy who is running a prison. And I stage bare knuckle boxing fights. And, there's soldiers from all over the world from World War II are hiding out there. And, it's that. It's like hard times in Vietnam in 1957.
Cool. Folks, listen, you can find Traded, starring Michael Paré, Trace Adkins, Tom Sizemore, and Chris Christopherson, in theaters on June 10th, as well as on demand in digital HD the very same day. Michael, do you know if there's a website, Twitter, or Facebook for either the movie or yourself?
There's Twitter, Traded, the unofficial website, and I'm sure there is an official Traded website. And you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm Michael Kevin Paul Ray at gmail.com. That's my Twitter address.
Okay. I actually did that before the interview, so you'll find that I'm one of your new followers.
Great. Great. Right.
Well, Michael Paré, great to talk to you. Great to close the circle on Eddie and the Cruisers. And Thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Okay, Mr. Media Bob, thank you very much.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of missing movie rock stars still living on the dark side in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.